You're listening to Gillespie, Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com. And welcome to Gillespie here on this Tuesday evening in Internet Radio Excellence. I am your host, Josh Gillespie, and with me is my wonderful co-host, the Smoozy Q. Susie, how are you doing?
Oh, Susie Q.
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I'm doing just dandy. I did a lot of work today. It's again, we record this the day before. It's Columbus Day, so
it is.
I didn't work today.
You did? Did you do some exploring?
No. Well, if you call working in my garage exploring, then yes, because we did find things we had that we lost a long time ago. Take for instance our plunger.
Hey.
Which, I tell you, with three kids, that came in handy today.
Well, it's a good thing you were keeping it in the garage then, right? Right where you need it.
Well, exactly. You know, that's where we do keep it. But, you know, we had this, we've been preparing now for a potential move. Now, we're not exactly sure where. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. We just know that we desperately want to leave our house. Not to say that our house is bad, but we're ready to move out and sure. find a different location, whether that's here, still in the wonderful great state of Indiana, or wherever the good Lord takes us. But, and I can, well, that's a topic for another time. Anyway, so we had amassed, and I kid you not, like, do you remember as a kid playing the game King of the Hill?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I had that hill in my garage made of cardboard boxes. and other assorted accoutrements that kind of led to the hill itself.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I had about King of the Hill, and there was a lost in there, a bunch of stuff. And so we finally decided to clean that all out and get everything arranged so that when we do... If we do move, like, instead of, you know, having this giant pile of boxes, they're actually neatly stowed away someplace else so that I can finally park in our garage again.
Mm-hmm.
Just in time for winter.
Right. Good timing.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I did a little bit of exploring in my own home today. A little long story short there. Speaking of exploring, we're missing... a person tonight.
We are. We're missing our mark.
We're missing in more ways than one. and therein lies the mystery.
Sure.
You know, where is Mark tonight? What is Mark doing tonight? That is a very good question. We have intercepted some texts. So we're affectionately calling this Warnergate until we know more. But that's we'll leave it to the listener to figure
some
out
some top secret diplomatic transmissions.
Absolutely, very similar to maybe some of the transmissions that you see on a daily basis. You know, if you're in government, maybe I don't know.
Maybe if you're on top of things, if you're in government.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, so we are without Mark tonight. But that's not to say that we don't have a good show, because obviously there is just a ton. I could use an expletive in front of that to say how much there is to discuss tonight. And we're going to try to hit everything from the recent Pew Research poll to Benghazi Gate to Romney's speech, his foreign policy speech today. Mm-hmm. To the debate last week, to the debate coming up on Thursday between Biden and Ryan. Holy crap, that's going to be hilarious. And to SNL's coverage of the debates. Just so much. And on top of that, no. This show has so much more to bring. Because tonight we also have on U.S. Senate candidate here from Indiana, Richard Murdoch. He is back on the show tonight. So we'll be chatting with him a little bit later. But I kind of want to get to, and I hope the listener isn't a little too rattled here. I think we have a special guest calling in. Hold on. Who is this? Hello, you are on Gillespie. Who is calling in?
I just wanted to call in and say I hate you people and I think your show sucks.
Wow, it's our first call-in hater.
Yeah, you people suck.
We love you.
Mark, it's a pleasure to have you on. It's a bit of a surprise, really.
Yeah, I love surprises.
Hey, you most certainly do. Well, you know, excuse me as I sip on my freshly squeezed Colombian coffee. Actually, it's
from, Rhino.
It's Folgers crystals from this morning. Anyway, but reheated. Anyway, so Mark, we were just about to get into the whole host of events that have occurred here in the last couple of weeks. Actually, within the last week. But before we get into that, what's been up with you?
I don't have to answer your question.
Oh,
I'm a free citizen. I can do what I want.
Well, I didn't say you had to answer, Mark. I could just assume hang up on you.
I just been traveling around the state, doing my thing. You know, living the dream.
Is that what you call it?
Shooting guns on Saturday night.
That's, yeah. Well,
I saw a picture of that, Mark. It looked like you were having fun.
It was kind of fun. It was kind of a stress reliever.
Yeah, I bet it was for the, you know, for everything that's been going on. I mean, it's been a bit of a wild year for you. And as we head into the final weeks of the campaign, I can only imagine the craziness that's kind of going on right now.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Let's just put it that way. With my full-time job and then this, and yeah, it's kind of nuts right now. But while I'm busy saving America, Josh,
you're at least saving Indiana.
And sit on your recliner and relax, buddy. We got it.
And I appreciate
that. Yeah, there's light at the end of the tunnel, right?
29 days left.
Under 30?
It's the longest. And if anybody's been involved, the last 30 days is the longest.
Yeah, it is.
Because you just, you know you're so close, but you're just so far away.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. here's the thing that I have mad props for Mike Pence, and I was talking to one of our cohorts in the political game earlier today, Mark, Trevor Foudy, who works with Congressman Todd Young. And Congressman Young, he has a general election opponent, but I mean basically this is Todd's election. You know, he's not going to lose it. He's going to easily win re-election, which is good for him as a freshman congressman. But the one thing that I took away from that conversation with Trevor was that they are not only are they not taking their general election opponent lightly, but they are willing to spend what they need her to put her away. And that's kind of how I see Mike Pence, is that, sure, you know, he has a very comfortable lead in the polls, but he is doing what he needs to put John Gregg away.
Well, and he's running like he's 20 points behind.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is Mike hasn't ran a negative campaign. And Mike refuses to run a negative campaign. I don't know if you read the Indy Star article yesterday.
That cage liner. I'm sorry. Were they talking about the new upcoming Gregg ad, or are they talking about? Actually, it was a fairly positive piece, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was about Mike and his issues, his family values, of why he doesn't run negative campaigns, and how those people are trying to push him to run one, and he won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him.
Mike Pence's campaign is very well disciplined. And they just ran a very positive campaign. Here's what we're going to do. here's how we're going to make the state move forward. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I see Todd Young doing the same thing, running a positive campaign.
And
he's not talking about his opponent. He's just talking about what he's going to do and keep doing. You know, some other members of Congress or future member of Congress are running some negative campaigns, but they're also in some tight races.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to throw some stuff out there.
Yeah.
But it's worked for Mike to run a positive campaign.
Yeah. Hey, Mark.
And people have actually embraced that because they're tired of the... I mean, you know this, Josh. In Indiana right now, they've spent up to $20 million on the Senate race on both sides.
Oh, yeah. And it is just... It's viscerally negative.
Yeah. I mean, I see more flexible on this one than in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Hey, Mark, have you heard anything about the new John Gregg, the ad that is supposed to run apparently starting next week? All I've heard is that no longer is John Gregg running for governor of Sanborn. He actually moved himself into the state house for this latest ad and is wearing a suit.
It's already ran. It's been running.
Oh, it has? I haven't seen it.
It's been running on Fox 59.
Well, dang.
it's been
Fox
59.
If you're hearing this, I apologize for not watching your channel enough to catch that. Anyway, what's the tenor of the ad? I haven't seen it.
Basically, he says we've had fun in this campaign, but it's time to get serious. And I'm the only one that's balanced the budget in this state.
Bull crap.
One that's worked together on both sides of the aisle. And then at the end. Where you think this is a positive ad about John Gregg,
mm-hmm.
He goes, I hope in the end you have me or you have Mike Pence the D.C. way. And I'm like, wow, man.
Wait, you were doing
so good up to that point.
Hold on, did he still say that I'm John Gregg, the guy with two first names running for governor? Please tell me he ditched that.
I think he ditched that, if I remember right.
Okay, now
he might not have. He might have.
Well, first of all, let's address that first thing where he says that he balanced the budget here in Indiana. That is total and complete bullcrap. During John Gregg's time,
his ads have been complete and utter
bullcrap. I know. But this is—he's actually making a claim that he did something. And it is a total lie. He balanced the budget on the backs of teachers and on the backs of school districts by taking money from them so that the budget could be balanced. And Mitch Daniels had to fix that. Mitch Daniels had to fix John Gregg's mistakes. And the fact is that John Gregg, as Speaker of the House... All right, which is, no, you don't balance a budget as Speaker of the House. I'm sorry. But to make that claim is just outright craziness. But if you're going to make that claim, okay, let's look at that claim. And the fact is that Indiana was still in the red, all right, when John Gregg so-called balanced the budget on the backs of teachers and school districts. That is just... That infuriates me. I hate false claims like that. Total bogus.
Well,
sorry, that got me off.
Well, and the thing is, you know, a super PAC came in now against Mike Pence.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta be kidding.
But
what do they
from
got?
From what I understand, it's a small media buy, and it's only going to be like 3 or 4 days of being ran, and then it's going to be done.
I was going to say, what's the incentive there? I mean, I can't imagine they want to throw money at
it. It's some kind of, from what I understand, Shella posted it in his blog today.
That'd be Jim Shella, local reporter here for a CBS affiliate.
He posted in his blog today, it's some union guy that started this, but he hasn't returned any calls.
How convenient.
And... they're connected with the Gregg campaign somehow, but the Gregg campaign says, well, we're not involved with it. But then the Gregg campaign spokesperson at the end said, I mean, the ad speaks for itself, so it's true.
What?
Basically, they're calling him Tea Party extremist and tying into Richard Murdoch. And
Oh, they got, are yeah. they, what's the, What's the phrase that they like to use against Richard Murdoch? I'm gonna space it here, and that doesn't matter because we're gonna be talking with Richard Murdoch here in just a couple minutes. But this whole thing, trying to, I don't know. These are negative ads. People here in Indiana are sick and tired of them, and we got to move on. And speaking of getting to move on, we have to move on to our next segment. So coming up next, we're going to be talking with Richard Murdoch, and maybe Mark Warner sticks around. Will we learn more about?
I'm not sticking around. I hate you people.
Will we learn more about Warnergate? Stay tuned. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRRadio.com. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, this is the very caring Kurt Schlichter from the various big Breitbart sites, and you're listening to FTR Radio. Satisfaction optional.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRRadio.com. With us is Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate and friend of the show, Richard Murdoch. Richard, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, Josh. I feel like we're starting to see the finish line out there on the horizon. It's been a long campaign, but we're looking forward to November 6th.
Oh, my goodness. Talk about, I mean, you have been through quite a campaign. I think, I don't know if many other candidates in this year's Senate races have actually kind of gone through the kind of race that you have gone through, kind of slogged through, were able to take down a 30-plus year incumbent senator in Richard Lugar in the primary, and here you are. We're on the verge of quite possibly another victory. What we're hoping for is another victory for you in the general. First of all, since the last time we talked to you, how has the campaign trail been?
Well, it's been long in reference to what you said with the primary. We actually began this campaign 620 days ago.
Wow.
So it just seems like I can't remember life before we were doing this, but honestly, now it's just 30 days to go. I feel very good about our prospects. To be sure, it's a tight race. Here in Indiana, Mitt Romney's leading by 16 to 18 points. Mike Pence is leading by 15 points. He's running for governor. This race is much tighter, but it's tight because the other side has spent thus far about $5.8 million in running negative ads. And in Indiana, that's a huge amount of airtime.
That is a huge amount of airtime. And that's something that I think people don't really put a lot of context to when they look at the poll numbers here in Indiana, when they see that Mike Pence and Mitt Romney, they have a little bit more comfortable leads. But I think a lot of that is also is that, I mean, for both of the candidates, both you and Congressman Donnelly, name ID is still something that both of you guys are still developing. But I think also, and this is something that Congressman Donnelly hasn't had to go through, but there have been negative ads being thrown at you left and right since the beginning of the year. I mean, it's been, you know, it's been who's going to take a punch at Richard Murdoch today?
Well, that's exactly right. I had had a lady come up to me at a street corner here in Indianapolis just a week ago, and she kind of tapped me on the shoulder, and I'm getting used to this look a little bit, but she tapped me on the shoulder with that kind of, I think I know who you are look, and she said, "You're Richard Murdoch, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am." And she smiled and said, "You don't look nearly as grainy as you do on TV." I think I'm known more for the grainy ads and those bizarre ads that their trackers have managed to clip out over literally several hundred hours of viewing that they've taken on me. But, you know, it's part of the process. We got just a little over 4 weeks to go. And as I say, we're liking our prospects here. But I will confess, I'm looking forward to getting to the end of this trail.
Well, I don't blame you. I mean, okay, the latest Howie DePaul poll came out, and this is the poll numbers that we've been referencing, having you and Congressman Donnelly statistically tied. And I think, honestly, what is absolutely fascinating about that poll is that, one, the numbers basically haven't shifted since the last poll that came out. I think it was in August. And as you said, I think it's actually been since that time. I mean, the millions of dollars that the Democrats have thrown at you, and they haven't been able to push the needle at all.
Exactly. Why are they doing it is the first question one needs to ask. And the easy answer is, you know, they have to run negative ads against me because they can't run anything on Joe Donnelly's record. You know, this is Indiana. It's a conservative state, to be sure, but especially this year. And when Joe Donnelly's record includes voting for TARP, voting for stimulus, voting for the bailouts, voting five times to raise the debt limit without calling for any kind of accountability, voting for card check, voting for Obamacare, you can't get elected in this state with that record, which is exactly why Obama's not spending a penny here, because it's his record, too. Mm-hmm. So Donnelly can't run on his record. He has to try to create an image of me that's way off base and untrue. And it's part of the process, but I think Hoosiers are pretty savvy. They're looking through that, and you know, I'm looking forward to it. We know there are a lot of undecideds out there, but their attitude, I think, is one that is going to be very favorable to our campaign.
You talk about a lot of the undecideds. I think that there are also a lot of the so-called Lugar Republicans that have been a little cool to move. What are you... I guess, what is the campaign doing to kind of reach out to some of these moderates? Because like we've said, I mean, the Democrats are throwing these nasty ads at you. And something that we're going to be addressing here shortly is all the false accusations that they're making against you.
We're working very hard within the Republican organizations to make sure those Lugar folks come home, so to speak. And again, I'm telling you, since Labor Day, we've seen tremendous movement in that regard. I'm not concerned that there's going to be any significant number whatsoever of the so-called Lugar Republicans who are not going to come our way. I believe easily 99% of them will come our way. Mm-hmm. You know, the bigger question in this race is just those typically independent voters who at this point remain undecided voters. Mm-hmm. And because of the record that Mr. Donnelly has, they can't be won over to his record. So the question is, are they going to simply buy off on all the negative stuff they've seen thus far? And I think as we enter the final 30 days, as we continue to make our message, they're going to come our way. And I can't speak for Mr. Donnelly, but I'll say this, and I'll bet he would agree. I'd much rather be in my shoes right now than his shoes, and I'm sure he'd trade places with me in a heartbeat because of the trend going on at the stake.
Well, I think you're hitting on something here, because especially of Congressman Donnelly's record. I mean, he likes to paint himself as this, like he likes to call himself this independent member of Congress. That latest ad of him being in the middle of the road, which I think is absolutely laughable when you look at the guy's record, and you've mentioned it, and which includes voting for President Obama's agenda 80% of the time. And voting for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House, and you knew he was on to some, like, he was scared. We all thought that, okay, before he decided to get in the Senate race, he decided to take some, I'm truly an independent thinker outside of the liberal elite in Washington, D.C., when he decided to throw his vote towards Heath Shuler, who is now retiring from Congress himself. I like to say that Joe Donnelly's retiring. It's just that he's doing it through the election process.
That's right. And, you know, that whole process is just fascinating. There's a real pattern here, if I may, for just a moment. Several days ago, I was doing a radio show with Senator Rob Portman and John Cornyn and John Barrasso here in Indianapolis, and we were talking about this vote. This race is really going to determine the majority leader and whether or not the majority leader is Harry Reid. And it was not a coincidence that that afternoon, Joe Donnelly suddenly said, well, if he's elected, he may not even vote for Harry Reid. In fact, he may not even vote for a Democrat as majority leader. Well, now, in point one, that means he would have to become a Republican to join the Republican caucus to vote for a Republican, which I don't think anybody thinks he would do.
No.
There's a pattern here. There's a pattern, because in 2006, in a tight race, he said he might not even vote for Nancy Pelosi for Speaker. But then he did. And then he voted for her again in 2008. Mm-hmm. And the only time he didn't vote for her was Speaker. Well, guess what? They weren't in the majority. She couldn't have been Speaker anyway.
Exactly.
They'd gone into the minority status. So he'll say anything and try to portray this middle-of-the-road image. But with his voting record, he's far from the middle of the road. He is well to the left.
Well, I want to address a couple of these accusations, these false accusations that they're making against you and the ads that they're running here in Indiana. First of all, the accusation that they say that you believe that Social Security and Medicare are unconstitutional.
Isn't that ridiculous?
I've never heard you say this before.
Well, and you've been around me quite a bit. And
I have.
The reason, you know, they run a TV commercial. I was in a question and answer group, and someone from the audience said to me once, where is Social Security in the Constitution? And my response was, it's not in the Constitution. Well, that's the little clip they show in their commercial.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, as I said then and many other times, you know, our founding fathers didn't put Social Security in the Constitution, but they didn't put in the FBI, they didn't put in the Department of Agriculture, and they didn't have the foresight to put in the National Aeronautics and Space Administration either. But that doesn't mean such things are not legal.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that they were suggesting by that ad that somehow I think all those programs end on the next day or something, it's just absolutely ludicrous. Again, this is what you do when you cannot run on your own voting record. It's really a pretty sad commentary on their part, I think.
Richard, one of the things that I know has also been thrown at you is from the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee about wanting to eliminate the Department of Education and being against Pell Grants, that sort of thing. Yeah, how do you address that?
You know, I'm one of those people who believes there ought to be accountability in government. And since the Department of Education was formed, the National Department of Education, we've seen national test scores go down and the number of high school dropouts each year go up. I think it's been a failure in many ways in the K-12 system, and I don't see that it should continue. We ought to be running education from the local level and from the state level. As far as Pell Grants and different federal scholarships, I've not called for those to be abolished. I think they can be better administered through other agencies, and something that ought to be continued. But the Department of Education, I don't see that it's accomplishing its mission.
It, some of these other things that they've brought up, like your the whole opposition to bipartisanship, or it's Richard Murdoch, my way or the highway, I think a lot of these lines are probably taken out of context, really.
Well, they absolutely are. And the one on bipartisanship, you know, it's amazing. Bipartisanship right in this day and age means the Democrats will propose $100 billion for a project that we can't afford. And the Republicans will say, no, that's ridiculous. Let's spend $50 billion that we can't afford. So they compromise and spend $75 billion that we can't afford.
You know, exactly.
That may be bipartisanship, but it's not solving our problems. In fact, it's making them worse. And, you know, I want to see us get to that point where we're working together to make government smaller. You know, I'll work with anybody who wants to make government more efficient and more accountable. But just to go to D.C. to make government bigger, to say let's keep kicking the can down the road and be indecisive when we need boldness, I'm not running for office to keep things the same. Politics is about presenting different opinions, different points of views, and then acting. And winning the argument with your cohorts, the people who have to cast those votes, to convince them you're on the right track. And I look forward to having that opportunity.
Now, tell me, you have a couple of debates coming up. And obviously, debates are kind of the hot topic right now because of the presidential debates. We hearken back to the one that you had against Richard Lugar. And I think, if I recall correctly, a lot of people didn't know what to expect from you from that particular debate. And there were a lot of foreign policy questions thrown at you, and people were kind of marveled that, it's, hey, Richard Murdoch, he could answer a foreign policy question against Richard Lugar. And it, so I think that, you know, the threat is there that, one, you performed, you know, far and above what people expected. The same way with Mitt Romney. You know, I think a lot of people were like, they were floored by how well Mitt Romney did against, you know, the one, our current mm-hmm. president. How are you preparing for your upcoming debates against Congressman Donnelly, and what do you expect to come out of those debates?
Well, first of all, I would say that Mitt Romney and I, he had the advantage, and I had the advantage going in my debate with Mr. Lugar that we both shared, and that was the old George W. Bush expression, it's always good to be misunderestimated. No one expected much out of me in that debate. No one expected Governor Romney to perform well. And the fact that, you know, he was well-prepared, and dare I say it, I think I was well-prepared. You just have to know your issues. But the thing that probably threw people off and stunned them a bit in my debate with Senator Lugar was to think that, yeah, the state treasurer does know a thing or two and has studied, not just studying the night before the test. But I've followed this stuff for all of my adult life. And I find foreign policy interesting. I find America's place in the world is important and significant, and therefore it's a logical thing to consider those issues. You know, as I look forward to the two debates with Mr. Donnelly, I'm doing what I always do, which is try to stay current in what's happening in the news and continue to find better ways to articulate my opinion in ways that it can be easily understood and try to be concise. It's not so much about what I want to say, but as much as how I say it to try to win people to our cause.
Well, speaking of staying on top of the news, obviously foreign policy is kind of a major issue right now with what has been going on with Libya and Egypt and Syria. What do you make of the president's foreign policy at this point in time?
Well, we're seeing the consequence of 3 years of trying to lead from behind. You know, one of his first official acts was, of course, that famous apology tour and the speech in Egypt where he said we've been well-intentioned, but we hadn't always done things correctly and tried to apologize for our actions. And I think we're paying the price for that. We're causing instability in the world, but particularly in the Middle East, when we aren't sending consistent messages as to who we support and who we don't. Even when the Democratic National Convention a couple weeks ago had their floor fight about whether or not Israel has the right to declare Jerusalem its own capital, when that argument takes place, representing the party of the President of the United States, it emboldens the enemies of Israel, which is a destabilizing act in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. When we now have seen, it's been more than a year since Barack Obama said Bashar al-Assad had to leave the leadership of Syria, and yet he's still there. And we still don't know, at least from what I can pick up, I don't think we still know who our friends might be. I don't know who we're trying to help or who we're trying to support or who we're trying to hinder, who we're trying to oppose within Syria.
Well, sure. I mean, you had the
president. Not a clear message.
Well, not, you're right. I mean, even though you had the president saying that, you know, he doesn't see Egypt as a friend. He didn't say they were an enemy. And then the administration had to pick up after him and say, oh, no, they are friends.
Yeah, right. And I would hate to think, since we're getting ready to send them $2 billion, that, in fact, this administration sees them as an enemy. I mean, what kind of consistency is there? And the fact is, you know, there are so many nations, and Egypt's the classic example right now, where are they our friend or are they our enemy? You know, that question, based on the actions of their people and their government, ought to give us great pause to say, do we want to send them $2 billion? Why are we not calling for a plan that would say we're going to send parts of those dollars when they do certain things? You know, we're going to hold them responsible to see that women's rights are protected and women's equality is protected. Or are they going to slip into the way of the Muslim Brotherhood? I mean, it seems to me that this administration is going to say, well, here's $2 billion, decide who you are. And I don't think that's good foreign policy, and it's certainly not good use of American taxpayer resources.
Well, kind of shifting back here real quick to domestic policy, because I know you can change on the fly like that. last Friday, the president's jobs report came out and showed that unemployment is down to a dubious 7.8%. What do you make of the jobs report? And are we starting to see a recovery? Or, I mean, what's going on here? Because, again, talk about mixed messages.
Well, I think the books have been cooked, frankly. I don't see any way, when you look at the entire set of data that were released that day, I don't see how we could possibly have gone from 8.2 to 7.8%. I think there's a little mischief there, and I suspect in another 6 weeks, oh, wait, that would be after the election, those numbers revised and revised upward. Mm-hmm. I talk to businessmen and women around Indiana. They're not seeing that sense of recovery. In fact, it's more the opposite. You know, Josh and Susie, it's an amazing thing. Here it is in the first part of October, and yet Americans today, business owners, can't tell you come January 1st what their tax rates will be. They can't tell you what their health care costs will be for their employees. They can't tell you what the regulatory environment is going to be. That's why $3 trillion is sitting on the sidelines in the United States right now and not being invested in creating jobs and creating new technologies. Investors have very simple demands on the system, which is to say they just want to know what the rules are. Mm-hmm. And they don't know the rules anymore, and so they're not making those investments. And the fact that jobs numbers can be going down, it reflects really on who's not showing up looking for work anymore. People are just walking away from this mess. And yet I still believe, as I said, that the numbers have been cooked. And in fact, we'll eventually, when they're corrected, see that we're now in our 44th month above 8% unemployment.
Well, the I forget which House committee, I think it was Ways and Means, actually came out with some numbers, said that real unemployment is almost 11%. Basically saying if the unemployment rate included the invisible unemployed, basically the discouraged workers who dropped out or never joined the workforce, the September 2012 unemployment rate would be 10.9%. And there are more unemployed now than when the economy was in quote-unquote free fall.
Yeah, and certainly if the unemployment numbers were going down, you would think the number of people on food stamps would be going down, but in fact, it's going up.
Right.
You know, something you said a moment ago really hits home with me, too, because it's those people who never get in the workforce. I'll tell you, the most devastating, I think, part of this has been to see so many young people who are coming out of college. And this last year's graduating college class had 50% employment after 3 months. In other words, half the people who got diplomas last spring haven't yet found a job.
Wow.
And those underclassmen who are continuing to work their way through the system are now having serious questions. Do they want to stay in the education system? Do they want to borrow more money to keep going to not have a job when they get out? This leads to a systematic crisis of confidence. And it's in those people that normally are the most optimistic young Americans. And that's the kind of thing we have to have a new president, I'm confident we will have, by the way, and a Congress that acts to get this system under control so that people know what the rules are, so they can again begin to invest and again create jobs.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Richard Murdoch. He is the Republican running for the U.S. Senate here in Indiana. Richard, thanks for being on with us tonight. I really appreciate it. Where can they find you on the internet so that they can know more about you as a candidate and you know, even donate?
Well, they can go to richardmurdoch.com, and Murdoch is spelled M-O-U-R-D-O-C-K. They can donate there, and at this date, in the last 30 days of the campaign, they can also sign up to be volunteers. If you can imagine, Josh, we've had over 7,000 Hoosiers sign up to be volunteers for us. We have a ground game that is almost unprecedented in Indiana.
Wow.
And they're going to play a huge part come November 6th. But richardmurdoch.com.
That is awesome, Richard. Again, thank you, sir, for taking the time and in dealing with all of our technical difficulties tonight.
Yes.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, again, we've been talking with Richard Murdoch. You can find him at richardmurdoch.com. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned for more.
Leave me when I say you'll be lost to know. Liar schemes and submachines will hang me from my rope. I'm tired of running from what I was into it.
Many of you felt that way on Election Day 4 years ago. Hope and change had a powerful appeal. But tonight, I'd ask a simple question. If you felt that excitement when you voted for Barack Obama, shouldn't you feel that way now that he's President Obama? You know there's something wrong with the kind of job he's done as president when the best feeling you had was the day you voted for him.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Well, Susie, we've had quite the evening. We have. We had Mark give us a surprise call-in. Our first real call-in guest or person to leave a message or, you know, not message, but, you know, someone to say how they feel.
That's right.
Then a great conversation with a little bit of technical difficulties, which we conveniently edited out so none of you will actually know what we're talking about. But trust me, oh my gosh. But, you know, okay, so we talked, at the top of the show, we talked about how there's been so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so in our limited amount of time, we're going to try to race through this.
Right.
And so the first thing that I want to bring up, because I want to kind of go in order a bit, the debates last week. And this has been the buzz of the internet, buzz of the media, buzz of SNL.
Right.
I mean, were you expecting the performance from Mitt Romney that we saw?
Not exactly. I mean, to me, that was him on his A game. I have seen him perform at times through the primary. He had one or two debates that I thought he did pretty well in. But of course, it wasn't just him and one other person, so you didn't get to see as much of him.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that was his strongest performance to date. But it was on par with, I think, maybe his first two debate performances in the primaries. What I wasn't expecting, and maybe should have been in retrospect, was Obama to be so flat.
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly what surprised me. I mean, the fact that Romney was like a bulldog out of the gate. I mean, he did not back down from anything that the president said. And if Jim Lehrer tried to cut him or anybody else off, he was on top of it. But yeah, the president was completely flat. I mean, they say that the incumbent usually loses the first debate. They talk of Reagan floundering in his first debate with Walter Mondale. President H.W. Bush, in his first two debates, you know, especially the second one with the town hall where he's looking at his watch. W apparently was flat in his first debate with John Kerry. But no one, I mean, this is the first time that CNN afterwards had a response of over 65% saying that the challenger in the debate won.
Yeah, this was pretty much a rout. And I mean, you know, you can't put too much stock. It's just one debate, and it certainly does not, you know, win an election or can't put too much stock into it. But what I thought was really interesting too is, I mean, CNN, their coverage of it even was, I actually tweeted the next day and asked if someone knew if ownership had changed at CNN, because it was like so beyond fair that I wasn't sure I was watching the right network.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Speaking of not fair, MSNBC and their utter meltdown. I mean, wow. And
that was pure comedy gold.
It was at SNL. God bless them. They finally, you know, if I can channel my inner Joe Biden there, they finally just went after MSNBC. They had a field day, you know, with Rachel Maddow coming out and saying the worst thing to ever happen ever. And I mean, you know, they had Sharpton running the theory of altitude sickness that Al Gore first used with his underwatched current TV.
Right.
Wow. Yes. And the thing is that SNL was trying to parody real life, and even still, real life was even more funny.
I was going to say, it really didn't need to be parodied. I mean, just the actual straight shot of how MSNBC handled it was great.
It was. Oh, my gosh. I mean, seriously, altitude sickness. The guy gave his freaking acceptance speech in front of styrofoam columns in Mile High Stadium 4 years ago. Okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, altitude I also thought that sickness was interesting, and I think I tweeted about this yesterday, too, that I thought it was really interesting that the latest spin about Romney's performance was that it was this great theatrical performance, and, you know, he's a great actor, and there was a lot of, I heard a lot of that buzz going around yesterday from the Obama spokespeople.
Well, they were throwing everything. Well,
isn't that interesting coming from the, you know, Greek Column Brigade? I mean, come on, really?
Exactly.
Theatrical performance?
The Greek Column Brigade, I like it. No, but that's absolutely true. And, you know, it's funny to watch the media narrative to go from, you know, Romney the winner to Romney the liar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you couldn't help but watch the media narrative. You knew it was going to happen.
Sure.
And it still floors me that Fox News is continuing to talk about the mainstream media narrative when I'm thinking, guys, you are the media.
Mm-hmm.
How can you be talking about the media narrative when you are the media?
it might just be a little lack of self-awareness there.
I don't know, but it just cracks me up every single time. And I mean, I love the coverage and they're spot on. I mean, they're telling the truth, but it just cracks me up to say that, you know, oh, the mainstream media narrative. And so maybe they're just talking about the three major networks. I don't know.
I would assume so.
But still, I mean, come on, guys. you own every single spot, you right. know, in cable news in terms of the top 10. I mean, they own them all.
Right.
It's just hilarious. But yeah, I mean, SNL just grabbed it and ran, and you know, the everyone was talking about Big Bird and, mm-hmm. And all this other stuff. But still, I was just honestly floored by Mitt Romney's performance. And I think it's because I didn't watch too many of the debates during the primary, because there was one every week, and I got kind of sick and tired of it.
There were quite a few, it was easy to get burned out on them.
But also, you know, again, because we got a lot to cover here in a very limited amount of time, but it was announced last week, just kind of going in order of events, that there's going to be a hearing this week in the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, chaired by Daryl Issa, looking into what we are affectionately calling Benghazi Gate. Not to be confused with Warner Gate.
Yeah, two totally different things.
But Benghazi Gate. And basically, the administration knew what was going on. Susie, you've been looking into this. What have you found?
I have. I mean, I've been following the story pretty closely since it originally broke. And just, I mean, I know in early on, I was questioning, okay, wait, why is all this focus being given, you know, why is there all this focus on this movie in relation to Libya? Because there were threats that were out there. There were threats, you know, earlier this summer about retaliation for having killed, I think his name is Al-Libi, one of the, mm-hmm. the Libyan, I don't even know what his position was, but there were threats ongoing. And even I, who I have no background in intelligence and no background in any of this stuff, just reading basic news articles on it, like within a day or two of the incident, was picking up on that. And yet you had the administration running with this narrative that, you know, oh, it was all this spontaneous uprising and, mm-hmm. you know, the embarrassing performance by Susan Rice on all the Sunday shows that following Sunday, which,
I have to
you
say,
know, just towing that line.
I have to feel I feel sorry for her for a bit.
What?
She I feel sorry for her for a bit, you know, just a little bit, because she's told that you have to say this.
Right. I mean, that was her job to do it. But I think it was a really poor decision on the part of whoever made the call to have that be. I mean, I understand, I'm surmising, I can't read their minds, but it seems to me that it was a pretty blatant attempt to try and spin the narrative a certain way so that it didn't reflect poorly on any sort of security breaches or intelligence failures. And, you know, I guess we can all understand that instinct. But recently, there started being rumblings that, hey, you know, the diplomatic personnel that were there in Libya had asked for additional security but were turned down, and people were looking into that and saying, well, wait a second, if they were asking for additional security, why wouldn't they be given that? Why would they be told just to deal with what they had? And then last night I came across a story. I first read it on Jim Hoft's site on Gateway Pundit, but then I've since seen articles from CBS, from ABC, mm-hmm. Talking about not only were they turned down for additional security, but apparently a security force was withdrawn in August, which included this Lieutenant Colonel Andrew Wood, who is one of the people who's been subpoenaed to testify on Wednesday in front of the Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Mm-hmm. But anyway, supposedly this force was withdrawn, and some additional security personnel were withdrawn. And the way that all was coming down is it looked like, okay, not only did they deny requests for additional security, but they actually reduced the security forces. And this is in the face of, I think they've listed like 13 incidents, threats, attacks against Western diplomats and other personnel in Libya in the past like 6 or 7 months, most of them in Benghazi.
And to top it all off, the Ambassador Stevens, he in his journal that CNN conveniently got a hold of before our own government did, you know, he writes about basically begging for more security because he feared for his life.
Right. And so, you know, I mean, I as soon as I saw that, I was kind of borderline ballistic, and I posted about it on Facebook, and then I got a very good lesson in liberal talking points. But
I'm going to have to go check that out. I'm sorry, I haven't seen that yet.
Fortunately, the facts don't really support the liberal talking points, or maybe unfortunately, really, when you come to think about it. But I did see that State Department issued a statement today at some point indicating that no, when this group was removed or withdrawn in August, they were replaced with DSS agents, diplomatic security service agents, and that there was never a difference really in the number of fully trained security personnel in Libya and specifically in Benghazi. That's the line state is taking now. Mm-hmm. Either they're fibbing or the people that were coming forward and the whistleblowers are mistaken or fibbing. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with this hearing on Wednesday, because somebody has got their information wrong.
Well, we have just a few minutes left, but how do you think this is going to play out in the debate next week, and how this wraps into Governor Romney's foreign policy speech today?
Well, I mean, you know, I hate to be cynical, but I think that these blunders that keep coming up when it comes to foreign policy, I mean, I think they only play in Romney's favor. I mean, he's you know, maybe he doesn't have the foreign policy background, but he's no dummy. And he's certainly skilled at, you know, marshaling facts and putting together a persuasive argument. So, you know, I think it only plays to his favor. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, basically we're saying, hey, you know, he's got a better shot because our current president sucks.
Yeah, well, it's you can't deny
and these are American lives on the line. So I don't like looking at it that way at all. But I think from a purely political/cynical perspective, I mean, I think you have to recognize that the Obama administration has kind of put themselves in a bit of a bind with some of this stuff.
Yeah. And, well, the final thing that we're going to bring up before we head off, well, basically for the evening is...
Into the sunset?
Into the sunset.
I apologize. I have a dog that's rolling around on the carpet here.
That's all right. That's
shaking his collar.
No, but the Pew Research Center poll, you know, we all say that, you know, we don't want to take... You know, we want to take that first debate with a grain of salt. We're pleased with how Romney did, but, you know, it was just a first debate. You know, we still have two more debates to go, and I still have concerns with the format for the next one. I don't think the town hall style will benefit Governor Romney. I think that benefits President Obama. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that, you know, Romney did so well in that last poll. Not only did he gain ground, he now leads President Obama, according to Pew Research Center. And I mean, this isn't Rasmussen people who we all expect to, you know, give us a close thing. This is Pew.
Right.
49-45, and he is dead even with women voters.
Right.
People, Governor Romney is shifting the narrative. He is moving the needle. This thing is within our grasp.
All right. Oh, I mean, it's a huge jump. I mean, I was expecting to see like a, you know, maybe like a 2-point bounce and hopefully a sustained trend, but you know, this is I think far more than anyone would have expected just coming out of that debate.
Two more debates.
And that was on top of the jobs numbers that came out on Friday, which we're not gonna have time to talk about.
I know. Gosh, so much show. Dang that
it's
Warner for
Warner's
calling
fault.
It is Warner's fault. He wasn't supposed to call in. Dang that Warner gate. Anyway, well, we will be right back after this to wrap up the show. So stick around, we'll be right back after this. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Sitting in the back row in my mind, see all the colors, they are flying by. I'm getting closer to the end, and it's too early to tell right now. The sun is setting and you say, hey, fellow conservatives. When you're drinking your overpriced coffee or a Moco Choco, whatever, and the Wacko Latte at Starbucks, you ever feel like you're the only conservative in there? That's because you probably are. But don't feel bad, as you can annoy the bejesus out of those pesky Moonbat, New York Times, and Daily Coast reading liberals by reading HoosierAccess.com. At HoosierAccess.com, you can read the latest thought and opinion from conservatives in the crossroads of America. Annoy the Moonbats. Add HoosierAccess.com to your favorites today.
Hi, this is Amelia Hamilton, author of One Nation Under God, a book for little patriots, and you are listening to FTR Radio.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Well, guys, we have had a very full evening. Mm-hmm. I want to thank my guest, our guest, not just my guest, our guest, U.S. Senate candidate Richard Murdoch from the wonderful state of Indiana. And guys, we didn't even get to, like Susie said, we didn't even get to the jobs numbers tonight. There's so much going on. October is going to be an insane month, people.
Mm-hmm.
Insane. We have the vice presidential debate on Thursday. Holy cow. Okay, I know we expect a rout, but we also expected President Obama to rout, well, at least to, you know, be a little bit there, compos mentis, for the first debate. So don't think that Paul Ryan will run away with this, but the only thing that I hold on to hope for is that Sarah Palin basically called it a tie when she debated Joe Biden. Anyway, so if Paul Ryan can't defeat that, I don't know. Anyway, so Susie, where can they find you on the internet?
They can find me on Twitter at SmoozyQ and on my blog at qwithaview.wordpress.com.
And you can find me at Josh Gillespie on the Twitter and joshgillespie.com, where you can find the complete archive of Gillespie. Coming up next, the Snark Factor with the Snark Factor players. You've been listening to Gillespie. For the SmoozyQ, I'm Josh Gillespie. Thanks, and have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Don't speak like you used to. And where do we go to now?
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?